There are things that we experience but never talk about. A shadow moving in a corner. Flickering of the lights. A disembodied voice. We invite you to talk with us. Share your story. Share your evidence. Because this isn't just your story. This is our story. This is Ghost Box Radio.
This is Ghost Box Radio on AM 950, where every week we talk about the paranormal, ufology, Bigfoot, or just the unusual. My name is Greg Bakken, and thank you very much for joining me today. First of all, first and foremost, happy Father's Day to everybody out there who is a father, who is a father figure, who is somebody who means a lot to somebody else. I really just want to hope, I hope that you are having a great day, that you feel like you are being respected for everything you've done, and that you're getting a good day out of it. And also for all of us who don't have fathers anymore, you know, I dedicate today to John F. Bakken, my dad, and definitely, you know, if you lost a parent of any kind, if you lost your dad, these days are not painful. They are joyous in many ways, for me at least, to remember those great times and those great people. And particularly, I remember my dad getting a pair of really loud Hawaiian shorts in, I think it was like 1988 or something. It might have been for his 50th birthday too, for all I know. But I just remember around that period of time, he got some really loud. Bathing shorts, and it wasn't really his style, but boy, did he wear them for years to come. And it's just some fun memories like that that just stay with you. So if you're having a good day, I'm so happy for you. I'm having a good day. I'm having a great day, in fact, because I'm able to talk to somebody that I really admire, and I was really excited that we were able to have on, and he's given up part of his Father's Day to talk with us today. Tony Spera is a paranormal researcher and the son-in-law of famed paranormal researchers Lorraine and Edward Warren. Tony has worked with the Warrens since the mid-1980s and is considered an expert in paranormal research. A former police officer, Tony holds an associate's degree in law enforcement and a bachelor's degree at the University of Connecticut. He has appeared on several paranormal television reality shows and has spoken at numerous colleges and universities. Tony and his team are continuing the legacy and work of the Warrens through their passion and involvement in paranormal phenomena and the desire to help families afflicted by haunted phenomena. Tony was a consultant on two movies, The Conjuring and The Conjuring 2, released by New Line Cinemas. He lives in Connecticut with his wife, Judy. Tony, welcome to Ghost Box Radio.
Oh, thank you very much, Greg. I'm very happy and pleased to be with you today.
Oh, likewise. Thank you very much. First of all, Tony, I just want to say thank you for your service as a police officer. That is really appreciated. Even though we're not in the same state, it's still, I mean, that job is difficult any state, and it takes a lot to be able to do what you do. So I just wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you.
Also, happy Father's Day. You took time out of your day for us, and I really appreciate that also. And then finally, I got a little bit of trivia for you that no one's going to care about except for me. The last time I interviewed you was 3 years ago today.
Really?
Yes.
It was?
Yeah. Yeah. It pops up on my Facebook feed as from another network that I was on, and I see this. I'm like, well, that's the 20th. That's going to be when we talk, and so there you are. And
that is crazy, isn't it? It's you know, like Lorraine used to say, there's no such thing as coincidences. There must be some kind of synchronicity going on there. But that's fine. That's terrific, Greg. I think in 2019, which was 3 years ago, I was on the 19th. I know I was in Los Angeles for the premiere of Annabelle Comes Home. So when I spoke to you, it was probably via phone, maybe from even L.A. I'm not even sure where I was.
Isn't it?
I think I might have been because I don't think I came home the next day. I think we were there a few days. So that's amazing.
That sounds about right. I mean, what a kind of, I don't want to say turn of events, because I don't necessarily know if it's that's the case or not, but just how that all blew up for everybody, and Lorraine was able to see some of it, and you and Judy are able to kind of keep it going. And how bizarre is that?
It's very bizarre, actually. Well, it's something never in your wildest dreams even think would occur. I remember what Ed used to say to me. Oh, you know, years ago, I'm talking maybe in the early 90s, he'd say, "Hey, Tone, you know what would make a great movie?" And we'd be at a lecture somewhere at a college, and we'd be wrapping up our equipment. And more than once, Ed brought this up. He said, "You know what would make a great movie?" I said, "What, Ed?" He said, "The Bewitched Farmhouse." So I looked at him. I said, "The Bewitched Farmhouse? Remember the farmhouse in Rhode Island, the Perrin family?" I said, "Yeah, that would be." He goes, "Yeah, that'd be a great case." And then he'd drop it. So he became ill in 2001. He wasn't able to speak or anything. And unfortunately, he passed away in 2006 after a long illness with a stroke. And Lorraine gets a phone call in about 2009 from this producer that knew Ed and Lorraine back in the early 80s, maybe mid-80s. In fact, I think it was probably around the Smurl case, the book The Haunting, the Smurl case in West Piston, Pennsylvania. It's around that time, maybe a little after. And this producer gentleman had come over to Ed's house and spoke to Ed and Lorraine, and Ed said to him, "Hey, you want to hear something fantastic? Let me play you an interview." And he played the interview he had with Carolyn Perrin and himself, Ed and Carolyn Perrin. Mm-hmm. And after Ed stopped the recording, he looked at this producer and he said, "Well, if that won't make a movie, I don't know what would." And then it just dropped and it went away. And the producer said, "Yeah, that's a great story." Because Ed filled him in after about the interview. He filled them all about the case. Mm-hmm. Filled him in. 2009, this same producer calls Lorraine and says, "You know what? I got a treatment for this movie, Lorraine. Are you interested?" She said, "What's the movie?" He said, "Well, I'm going to call it The Conjuring. It's that farmhouse in Rhode Island." And she said, "Yeah, whatever, if you think you can do something with it." And then that kind of dropped for several months. But then she started to get more phone calls from this gentleman. And he said, "Look, it's getting serious. You know, it looks like Summit Entertainment wants to get this manuscript and make a movie." Then somehow Summit dropped out and Warner Brothers came in, New Line Cinema came in. And to make a long story short, it was about 2010 or 11 that she signed the contract to give her life story rights over to New Line Cinema and Warner Brothers to make movies on Ed and Lorraine's cases. And lo and behold, 2012, they started to film The Conjuring 1. The manuscript was all completed. Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga came to Lorraine's house, and I was there waiting with Lorraine and my wife, Judy, and we watched, like it was almost like a surreal moment. I hate to use the word surreal because everybody used it, but it was.
Yeah.
When you see a car pull into the driveway at Lorraine's house and Patrick Wilson gets out and Vera Farmiga gets out the passenger side, and they had Starbucks iced coffee in their hand, walking up the driveway. And my wife was like, "That's really them. That's really them." And at that time, Patrick Wilson was the more famous one in our book because he had just finished a TV series called The Gifted Man.
Oh, yeah.
And we used to watch that show. He was supposed to be a gifted surgeon. And we watched every episode. So he was the famous one when he walked in the house. Vera Farmiga, I had to look her up. And I saw that she was in several movies, including one with George Clooney called Up in the Air. And she had many movies before that, but I wasn't too aware of them. So I was actually more enthralled and enthused and intrigued by Patrick when they first walked in. But then come to find out how great of an actress Vera was.
Yes.
And Vera spoke to Lorraine, and we, of course, Patrick. And then Patrick said he wanted to see the museum. So I said, "Vera, do you want to come down and see it?" She said, "No, I want to stay with Lorraine. I want to learn all about Lorraine Warren." And she picked Lorraine's brain to try to figure out how to present herself as Lorraine on screen. And Patrick came down and came to the museum and looked around. And then the second time they came to visit, you know, Vera did come and go visit the museum. Mm-hmm. And they sat in the gazebo, the same gazebo that's in the end of The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It movie that was just released. It's not the same gazebo. It looks exactly the same, but it's a replica of the gazebo that Lorraine has in her backyard, and that's where Patrick, me, and Vera and Lorraine sat when they came the second time regarding The Conjuring 2 movie.
I have to say, the one thing that really hits me about those Conjuring movies is not the scariness, it's not the frights. I mean, they're amazing, but it's that connection of Ed and Lorraine.
And
the love, and that they are a partnership. And, you know, I know that even though there's a lot of folks out there who like that sort of Ed and Lorraine dynamic and think of themselves that way, it's inspiration to a lot of people. I think that's amazing.
Well, yeah, because it's rooted in such deep-seated love, because Lorraine met Ed when she was 16 years old. With her girlfriends, when they said, "Let's go to the movies, and there's a boy we want you to meet." At 16 years old, and Lorraine said, "Well, I'm not really into boys. I'm into more like, you know, schoolwork and stuff."
Yeah.
So you go into this movie theater called the Colonial Theater in Bridgeport, Connecticut, which is the building's still there, but it's not a movie theater. And Ed was an usher there. He was 16 years old too, and Ed always used to dress really sharply, mm-hmm. you know, with pleated pants and shiny shoes and hair perfect, even at 16. So she walks in, and she sees Ed after they introduce Lorraine to Ed, and she said, she told me this later, she goes, "I looked at him, I said, boy, what a nice-looking young man he is, with those pleated pants, and she said he smelled like Noxzema, like that cream." And I said, "Well, what do you mean, Lorraine? Why are you telling me that?" She said, "Well, you know, he was a lifeguard in the daytime in the summer, and at night he ushered at the movie theater. And he used to get sunburn, and he would put his all over his whole body. He'd put Noxzema to help the sunburn. And when I first met him, that's all I could smell was Noxzema." But that's the first time they met. She says to the girls after the show, he says, "I want to take you girls out for a soda." And they all agreed, including Lorraine. They walked to this luncheonette place to get a soda. And this is kind of a joke I got to tell you that most people don't know. Is that they get to the luncheonette, and the two girls say, "Well, I'll have a Coke." And the other girl says, "I'll have a Coke." They're 5 cents for a Coke.
Right.
1942, around 42. And Lorraine says, "Well, I don't like Coke. I'm going to get an ice cream soda," which was 10 cents. Right? So Ed used to kid her all the time. He used to say, "I always knew you were a gold digger from the first day I met you."
Expensive date.
Because you wanted a lot of ice cream soda. So they're leaving, and they're going home, and the two girls' houses were before Lorraine, so now Lorraine's alone with Ed. And she said, "Oh, no, you can't walk me all the way home." And he says, "Why not?" She said, I didn't go out with you, so I can't come home with you." That's how strict everything was back then.
Yeah.
And she said, he said, "Okay, well, I'll see you later." And he was like backstepping across the street, and then he ran across the street. And Lorraine told me later, she said, she was psychic even then at 16, actually at age 9. And she said, "I didn't see the young 140-pound athletic boy running across the street." She goes, "In my mind's eye, I saw Ed as he was when I was married to him, as an older man and overweight.
Wow.
And she said, "In fact, I went home that night and wrote in my diary, today I met the man I'm going to marry." And she did. And she told me, she said, "I never dated a man prior or since I met Lorraine. He's the only boy I ever went out with, and I married him."
That's amazing.
So, that is a love story, right? How many girls or men do you know, boys, that only the first person they ever dated, they married?
No.
Not that many.
Not that many. Why don't we do this? Why don't we, Tony, take our first break? When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with paranormal researcher and son-in-law to Ed and Lorraine Warren, Tony Spera. You're listening to Ghost Box Radio and the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, AM 950. Back on Ghost Box Radio on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, AM 950. Thank you very much. My name is Greg Bach, and our guest today is paranormal researcher and son-in-law to Ed and Lorraine Warren, Tony Spera. Tony, we were talking a little bit about true meaning. I mean, it's so funny, actually, in a kind of a weird way about there is such a story of love between Ed and Lorraine Warren. I mean, just pure love. That, like you right. said, this was Lorraine's only boyfriend. This she wasn't even necessarily expecting to, you know, get in necessarily a relationship. It sounds like at that point, but that was her only love. They stayed together forever. They're still together.
Right.
And you got to think with the work that they went into, that they ended up doing, that's what kept them together, is that love, and kept them safe. And I think that's what comes across in those films.
I think you're absolutely right on that. It's like a duo that wouldn't be the same if they were broken up. In other words, like, you know, it's like a musical duo like Dolly Parton and
Kenny Rogers.
Or the Everly Brothers. Or you take half of those people away, and then it's just not the same. It's like they were meant to be together. And because Ed grew up in a haunted house from age 5 to 8. I'm sorry, from age 5 to 12 in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what are the odds that he meets a woman, a girl, that had psychic abilities? I mean, really clairvoyant. She was clairvoyant and clairaudient, and she had she was a light trance medium. To meet someone like that and have that as your successful duo going forward as far as business, because you need someone like that when you walk into a haunted home to verify, to confirm that what's there really are either earthbound spirits or perhaps more malevolent spirits like, you know, devils or demons, whereas a regular ghost hunting team can go in. It might take them a long time to kind of analyze and figure out what's going on, where Lorraine could basically walk into a house and say to Ed, there's nothing here.
Mm-hmm.
These people might have an imagination or something, but there's really nothing going on that I can sense. Or she'll say, yeah, I sense a human spirit in this house. Or she'll say, I sense something dark and not human. So for her to be able to do that was a great, great help to Ed when he went in to investigate a house.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it truly is it's a wonderful thing. And then after Ed had passed, I mean, you've been working. I mean, obviously, you married their daughter Judy,
right?
And you've been working with them, being a part of everything since the 80s. I mean,
right.
I mean, there. What was that like to first get into that, and then kind of grow and now be the what would you even call yourself? Do you keep just keeper of the legacy? I mean,
what I like to call myself is a psychic researcher, a ghost hunter, an investigator,
mm-hmm.
Of the paranormal. I don't like to call myself a demonologist like so many other young folks do, and I'm a lot older, because I know the knowledge base that Ed had, how much knowledge, he imparted a lot of knowledge to me, but I still feel like, maybe because I was so close to Ed, I still feel like I wasn't as good as Ed. Mm-hmm. Didn't know as much as Ed, almost like a karate teacher, master, with ninth degree black belt, teaches you karate or taekwondo, and then all of a sudden, you get a black belt. You know in your heart you're not as good as the master. You don't know really quite as much as the master does, even though you think you're good.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I feel. I think I'm good. I know I'm an expert, but I don't like to say I'm a demonologist because Ed was a true demonologist.
Mm-hmm.
He taught me so much. I met him in 79, October 79. That's when I met my wife, and I got married to her in 86. But I knew Ed and Lorraine since late 1979 when I met him at UConn when they were doing a presentation. So I didn't really go on cases with him until like the mid-80s, but I used to help him out on presentations and go over his house all the time in Lorraine and speak to them at length and just pick his brain about it, because I was intrigued from that first lecture I ever heard at UConn. And, you know, coming from a police background, you're a skeptic. Police officers are skeptical
yeah.
by nature. They're
yeah.
cynical, skeptical, and they should be. They should be, because you can't believe every story that you hear out there, because a lot of people lie to you.
Yeah.
So you want to see it, feel it, sense it yourself. And that's what Ed kind of told me. He says, look, you got to look for these certain things. You have to know if people are making up stories or if they're not. And so I learned so much from Ed and from Lorraine as far as the paranormal realm itself and how to do an investigation. And I remember one time Ed said to me, he goes, you know, you'll be good at this. And I said, well, why? Because I was a cop. He goes, no, not, because that's part of it. He goes, that's not really why. He said, because you have compassion for people. you lost your family. Because, you know, I lost my mom when I was 17.
Oh.
She was only 45.
Oh, goodness.
Heart attack. My brother when he was 27 of liver cancer. And my father when I was 35. And he says, you've been through it, kid. He said, you know what it's like to have a rough life. He says, so when you go into those houses to speak to these people, you'll have compassion for them. And he's right, because to be a paranormal investigator, you have to have a lot of compassion for who you're dealing with. Because these people are tormented in the house. When they're in the, now, just take, I know you want to speak about Annabelle. You know, there's things in this realm that people don't realize, that something like an inanimate object could be infested with evil. Well, it can be. And the reason why, like, for instance, the Annabelle doll, we'll get into that. It was because what was done with that doll prior to these two nurses in Connecticut receiving it, we don't know what was done with it, but Ed used to tell me, he goes, you don't have to, I don't have to know for sure, but I know. I says, well, what do you mean? He says, there was incantations and rituals done over the doll.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you know, like when you go into a church and you see a priest or a minister and you ask them to bless an object for you, like a medal or a cross, and they bless it? He said, they're imparting and they're infusing that object with holiness and goodness from God. He said, but when they do incantations in black witchcraft and Satanism, you're infusing it with the total opposite of that, something unholy, unblessed. He said, and that's what a lot of people do through ritualistic practices. And these objects will have attachments to them that are evil in nature. So when the nurses received that doll in Hartford, Connecticut, at first, nothing happened, but things escalate pretty quickly when the doll would be found in different sections of the house after they came back from their nursing shift. They'd leave it on the couch. They'd come home. It's in the bed.
Mm-hmm.
She'd leave it with the legs crossed and the Raggedy Ann doll, and then they'd come home and the legs run crossed. And the nurses thought that maybe the superintendent of the building was a young guy that thought he was probably playing a joke on him. She said, maybe he's coming in and just moving it around as a joke. Let's do something. Let's put some scotch tape on the bottom of the entryway of the door, and let's put the rug a certain fashion, and we'll know if anybody was in this apartment. Well, lo and behold, no one was in the apartment. The tape was intact, and the doll was in a different location again. So they were worried that something was up with this doll. They didn't know what. What they did, though, is they called in a psychic that they knew, a psychic who said, oh, we'll have a seance, and I'll tell you what's going on.
So, Tony, can I just interrupt real fast because we're on a short break? Can we pick
go ahead.
Let's pick this up real fast after so we can get a lot of time to talk about Annabelle and talk more about Tony. You're listening to Ghost Box Radio on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, AM 950. And I just wanted to give a shout-out and thank you to Robert Pilot and Native Roots Radio that airs weekdays Monday through Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. I just wanted to thank them. They're always very supportive of me, and I greatly, greatly appreciate it. Please, if you have a chance, please check it out. Also, I just wanted to say I was finally able to go to the Collective Dimensions store for myself in Crystal. I got to see it for myself. I've been saying I was going to see it for a long time. It's beautiful. Lots of practitioners there, all ready to help. Lots of great things, such as you get your pendulums and crystals, you get candles, all sorts of things that you want to get. Also, they have a lot of services that they offer, such as Reiki, readings, all sorts of good stuff, including classes. Check out their website. You can go to collectivedimensions.com. Collective Dimensions believes in connection, inclusion, love, oneness, and compassion. Please check them out once again, collectivedimensions.com. Also, want to remind everyone, every Sunday night, tonight, for example, I'll be doing a live Spirit Box session on all of my Facebook pages. We're going to reach out to folks whose fathers have passed away or father figures. Please check that out. That's going to be 10 p.m. Central Standard Time, and it's these things can be pretty powerful. So, you know, just come prepared to reach out. We only reach out to spirits of love and light. So if this is something that you're interested in, please check it out. Our guest today is paranormal researcher and son-in-law to Ed and Lorraine Warren, Tony Spera. Tony, I do apologize. I feel like I have to keep cutting you off only because we have to get these commercials in, but I wish I could just talk to you for hours and hours and hours because I feel bad.
That's why I'm talking fast, because I'm trying to get as much as I can in, because I know you have to do only an hour. But so just to get quickly back, they had a seance with Annabelle, and the psychic came in. That was a friend of theirs, mm-hmm. and they did a seance around the table, and here's what happened. The psychic says, I'm picking up the spirit of a young girl who was killed outside your apartment complex in a car accident. Her name is Annabelle, and she's within this doll. Her spirit is in the doll. Now, the nurses bought that line hook, line, and sinker, mm-hmm. but you know, let me just tell you in the audience that God would never allow a human spirit to inhabit an inanimate object. You know, you're not going to find your grandmother in a chair or in a tree, or just like you're not going to find a little girl in there. But they thought, because the doll was around, that, yes, I believe the psychic, there's a spirit of a girl in there. So they really treated her like a spirit was in the doll. But one day, though, it all changed. And when it changed is when Lou, the fiancé of Donna, who had the doll, the nurse, he's sleeping on the couch, and the doll is at the other end of the couch. He wakes up with a start. He's sweaty. He's breathing heavy. And he's clutching his chest and his neck. Mm-hmm. And Donna says, what's the matter, Lou? What the heck happened? He says, I just had the worst nightmare in the world. I had a dream that doll was crawling up my leg, mm-hmm. got to my neck, and started to strangle me to death. And he's breathing hard. So he picks up the doll off the couch, throws it across the room, and he says, that's just a Raggedy Ann doll. That can't hurt anything. With that, when he did that, 7 what we call psychic wounds appeared on his chest and on his stomach, 4 on his chest, 3 on his stomach, where you could see like someone took a scalpel and blood was oozing through his T-shirt. We call it psychic wounds because it lasted about a day and a half, then it disappeared.
Completely.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Donna said, this ain't right. This isn't right. Something's wrong. And that's when she contacted an Episcopal priest in Hartford, and he said, you know what, I don't deal with this stuff. Why don't you call the Warrens? They know about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he said. And Ed and Lorraine did come out and interview the girls, and they called in a Catholic priest to do an exorcism of the house, which was a casting out of spirits of the dwelling. And then Ed took the doll back to the museum because the girl says, we don't want that doll anymore. There's something really evil in that doll, and Ed knew it too. So it's in a case in the museum. So people ask me all the time, like, well, why don't you get rid of the doll? Why don't you just throw it out? Just like in the movie, and that's where they got it from. In the movie, it's your vessel. You're not destroying what's there, with the evil that might be there. And we have prayers that are set around the doll, ritualistic binding prayers, and around the other objects to keep what's there encompassed, you know?
Yep.
So, yeah, it's something. That's just one kind of haunting. But there's other a million kinds of hauntings, and a lot of them involve human spirits that don't want to pass over correctly. They want to stay near their belongings, that the house that they worked so hard to get and all their belongings, you know?
Yeah. So let me ask you, when you first saw Annabelle, or even to this day, have you ever felt anything that kind of permeated outside the case that you might attribute to Annabelle, or is the doll completely bound in that case?
Well, it's hard to say if she's completely bound. I don't think she is. And Ed told me that, you know, you never know with an evilly infused object like that where rituals were set over it. You know, if you ever been to a place like just an example, like a restaurant, mm-hmm. and, you know, the restaurant has got good food and all the staff is nice. 6 months later, the place goes out of business, you know. So another one goes in, same thing, great food, nice staff, good location. A year later, it goes out of business. Ed used to call places like that an aura of disaster. He'd say it has an aura of disaster about that property.
Yeah.
Well, it could be the same thing with that doll. It has an aura about it that you don't want to mess with, you know. And I felt strange when I first saw the doll. And, of course, you know, Ed's telling me how dangerous it is, and I'm believing every word that Ed says anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm new to this, so I'm like, whoa. And so now, you know, I don't like to even stare at the doll very much. In fact, Lorraine, when she was well, when she was alive, she wouldn't even go into the museum. And if she did go into the museum very shortly, for a short time, she used to tell me, she said, I never look at the doll's eye. I never look in the eyes of the doll, which are these black button eyes, because that doll has moved within the case. I haven't seen it move, but we've taken photographs or had people take photographs. 5 minutes later, they take a second photograph, and the arm is in a different location, though the case hasn't been touched. So it's like the doll moved, and we can't tell how, but there's something going on. So, and a lot of things have happened to people who have challenged the doll. You know, just real quickly, a motorcyclist came with his girlfriend. When Ed was giving a short tour of the museum to college kids, they came, about 12 people. and the kid was among them with his girlfriend. And while Ed was talking about the slash marks that appeared on Lou, and the doll was in a case, and the kid ran up to the doll, he's about 20 years old, banging on the glass case saying, "This is a bunch of BS.
Yeah.
This can't hurt anybody. If it can hurt anybody, do something to me right now." And Ed says, "Hey, look, you and your girlfriend leave. I can't have that. I just got through warning you guys." 3 hours later, this young man was dead. He went head on into a tree and was killed. And the girl wasn't killed. She was very seriously injured, though. And when interviewed, she said that, you know, the last thing that she could recall was that they were laughing and joking about the doll when he lost control of that bike and went into a tree. So people say, well, was it the doll that did it? Well, who knows for sure? You know, you never know things positively like that. But why would you challenge evil? Why would you challenge something you know nothing about, really?
That's what I was just going to say. Why even joke about it if there's a possibility of it? What point is it? You know, that's something that I find in a lot of current paranormal teams and shows that,
right,
that you get those people who want to challenge. Maybe I'm not just talking about Annabelle, but just in general.
Right.
And you know, you're kind of the old guard, so to speak, if you don't mind me saying so. And
right,
it's like we got about 3 minutes before we go to break again. But what is your thoughts on seeing that? Because it's changed since the 80s.
My thoughts are that they're treading on dangerous ground when they do that. When they challenge something they know nothing about, they challenge the unknown. It's like opening a window in a log cabin out in the woods. Because, you know, your girlfriend likes to collect butterflies. So you say, she says, "I'm going to leave the window open. Maybe a butterfly will come in." Yeah, well, maybe a wolf or a bear will come through, too. You don't know what you're inviting in. When you challenge, like, well, whatever's here, come show yourself. Well, whatever's there may not be a human spirit. It may not be that benevolent old lady that passed away in the house. Because you're challenging an unknown realm, something that you haven't prepared for and maybe haven't protected yourself about. You know, like with the white light around you, and you don't have a lot of faith in God, so you're just opening a door. It's like a cop walking into a house with a barricaded suspect, and he has no gun, no bulletproof vest, and he's just going to talk to the guy, and then
right,
the guy shoots him and kills him. So, you know, you have to be prepared, and you have to know what you're doing. A lot of these people, they don't know anything about the paranormal, but they make like they do,
yes,
and they think they do, but they
yes
don't, and they get themselves in the jam. I've had many, many paranormal groups send me emails looking for desperate help because they opened the door and they couldn't close it.
And they went too far.
They went too far, yeah.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And I don't want to get too far into it because we're just about to go into break. But, I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind, too, was kind of the disrespect of
right
you and the doll on Ghost Adventures.
Right,
and I
right
did, I mean, you were very clear about what to do and what not to do, and that did not happen that way.
No, because they wanted to push the envelope. You know, they promised, the producers promised, we'll be very respectful. Oh, of course, no, with utmost respect. And, you know, you'll see the doll, you'll be in total control of the doll, we'll never touch the doll, we'll respect your wishes, and then that didn't happen. And that's why the first episode that they aired was only 45 minutes long, and they filled it in with something else, because I walked out. I went and said, "I'm taking the doll back," and I like cut the episode short, kind of thing.
Yep.
And I said, "I'm taking the doll back with me." I mean, subsequent ones they probably just like made it as part of the show, but the first show was supposed to be an hour, but the doll was only on for 45 minutes because I pulled the doll, put her back in the road case, and said, "I'm out of here," because they didn't respect my wishes.
No,
they were making it more like a joke or just to get ratings.
Yep. Nope. It was very disrespectful, and that's the number one thing. And I keep saying this on the show and everywhere else that I talk. Paranormal investigation, number one thing is respect, really.
Right. Right. It is. It is. Absolutely.
What we're going to do, we're going to take our last break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with paranormal researcher and son-in-law to Ed and Lorraine Warren, Tony Spera. You're listening to Ghost Box Radio on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, AM 950. Join us next week on Ghost Box Radio with Greg Bakken as we have the return of psychic medium tarot card reader Anae. She'll be back to answer your one question readings
or any questions you have for that matter. Plus, we're going to talk to her about her new journey as head pastor of the Tamara Spiritual Center. And then also, I think this is still happening. I'm not 100% sure, but I think I'm going to be tomorrow on the Matt McNeil Show for a little bit. Matt McNeil Show airs Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m. Central Standard Time. I'm going to be on tomorrow to talk a little bit about UFOs. If you may or may not know, there's a report coming out soon to the government, from the government, I should say, about UFOs, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. It hasn't been released yet, but we're going to, you know, talk about that. And if you have a chance, please check it out tomorrow. I think I'm going to be on around 5 or so. So that will be very interesting. Now, Tony, I brought up the fact that next week we're going to have our psychic medium, tarot card reader, Aneon. She is, right. Her and I do a lot of events together. We do a lot of investigations together. She's located in Tucson. I'm up here in Minnesota. But right. She grew up in Danbury, Connecticut,
wow.
and grew up with friends you are probably familiar with,
wow.
as she says. So, yeah, that was really interesting. And one question that she had for you is there – and this is for me, too, because I'm very interested also in this. Is there anyone in particular you'd recommend for us to learn demonology from? And just so you know, we're looking to do so for – information sake, I think, opposed to being, demonologist, to learn
yeah.
about it.
Well, yeah. Off the top of my head, I couldn't give you a name, except I could give you a couple books to read
yep.
to learn more. The first book you should read, if you didn't read it already, is The Demonologist by Gerald Brittle, which is as told to Ed and Lorraine Warren.
I'm holding it right now. I'm holding it up to the camera.
That's number one.
Yep.
That would be the first one I would suggest.
It's a fantastic read, by the way.
Yes, thank you. And then that's available on Amazon, and you can go to the official Ed and Lorraine Warren YouTube channel too, and it's got a lot of information about that book and about other cases, and has Ed and Lorraine interviews on the official Ed and Lorraine Warren. But also Malachi Martin, Hostage to the Devil, Hostage to the Devil. And then also any books by Father Gabriel Amorth, that's Amorth, Father Gabriel Amorth, who was an exorcist. So if you want to learn about demonology, any book by him, Malachi Martin's Hostage to the Devil or The Demonologist, start with those.
That's great. We have about 6 minutes left in the show, a little less than that. And, you know, being that it's Father's Day, being that you're a father, being that, your wife, Judy, grew up in this very specific environment. And we were just having this conversation with some other people, actually, Anna and I, and she was the one that suggested this question.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to kids coming to paranormal events or just kids growing up in this situation.
Right.
As a father, how do you acclimate them to this kind of way of thinking or this kind of, maybe respect of spirits or just being careful and everything that goes along with that?
Yeah, well, I think it starts with your spiritual beliefs. It starts with faith. You have to teach your child that there is a God and there is a devil. You have to start with the rudimentary, with the fundamentals.
Sure.
That you can't bring someone up to respect the paranormal realm or just respect ghosts or devils or demons without teaching them about God and the Creator, and that we're created in God's image, and that we're two, we're body and spirit. We're not just body.
Mm-hmm.
We're body and spirit, and that we'll never die. If you can teach your son or daughter that you are a spirit as well as a body, and your goal is not to just be a body. Your goal is to be spiritual and to be a spirit forever, because when your body dies, your spirit never dies. So we'll see each other in the afterlife, and depends on what afterlife you want to go to by how you are as a human being, how you treat others, and how you believe in God or the devil. If you follow the devil's path, you may not go to heaven and see your family. So you should be as good of a person as you could be, following God's guidelines for life, and you'll go to the right place and be kind to other people, So I just want to mention that we are having a Paracon in October,
Yes.
October 30th at the Waterbury Marriott, Courtyard by Marriott on October 30th. We do have tickets still available, not a lot. But you're invited. You and your friends can come if they want for free.
Oh, thank you.
The warrens.net website, just go to events. warrens.net. Go to events, and you could still buy tickets. We've got about we're only going to sell like 1,100 tickets. We already sold 1,000.
Oh, my goodness.
So, and it's not until October. So it could be popular because I'm going to have artifacts from the museum on display there also.
Now, you know. now the museum itself is not open, right?
The museum itself is closed due to zoning regulations.
Okay.
A neighbor complained after the first Conjuring movie came out, a lot of people were driving down the street, knocking on houses. Mm-hmm. Hey, is this a museum? They're banging on the wrong door, you know, 11:30 at night.
Yeah.
And one of the neighbors got a little ticked off, can't blame her. And she called the town zoning, and the zoning says, you know, you're not zoned for that. You have to stop. And I had to stop or face a $150 a day fine.
Oh, goodness.
So.
I only ask because I'm going out to Gettysburg in a couple weeks, and I looked, and you guys are about 4 hours away from where I'm going to be. And I thought if you guys were open, I'd come up and say hi, but you're not open.
Unfortunately, I can't open it because one time I didn't open it for a year after that, and I had some people really bugging me, a group of about seven people. Oh, no, we'll keep it private. We won't tell anybody. I said, okay, well. I'll drive you to the location.
Yeah.
Get in our van and do our SUV. Let's go. And I took them. And they went in the house, in the museum behind the house. It's hard to see. Lo and behold, 2 days later, I got a letter from the zoning. The neighbor saw it. The binoculars.
Yeah.
She saw it and she said, well, they're holding a tour again. And they threatened me with a citation. So I said, well, I can't do that anymore.
Just not worth it. No.
Not worth it. It's not worth it. And I'm looking for another location. But you got to find the kind of right location that's going to look like a museum. It can't be like in a strip mall with a pizza parlor next to it. You know, it can't be next to Jenny's Nail Salon. You know. So.
But I'll tell you, if you were Anne on here, would be very happy about that. She loves she loves her nails. So. So I think she'd fit right in there. But I actually was talking about this with her today, and we were really we want to go. We want to go in October.
And that would be good. And you're both invited for no charge, of course.
You're so
kind.
Show
you around. We're going to have some pretty good guest speakers. You know, we're going to have Ryan Buell.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have a UFO guy. And by the way, UFOs are absolutely real.
Yes.
It's no foreign military because there wouldn't be any advanced foreign military in 1947 with Roswell. You know, people forget that. Oh, maybe it's a military technology. What, from 70 years ago they had that kind of technology? I think they would have done something by now if it was an earthly thing, you know. It's definitely UFOs are definitely real, and we're going to learn some things when that report comes out. But we're not going to learn everything because it's still going to hold things back. But I my feeling is some alien force told us, you better say something. If you don't, we're going to say something.
Absolutely.
We're going to tell you that we're here.
So
I think that's what's going on.
I think you're right. So we're going to have to cut this short. Tony, would you come back sometime? I promise.
Yeah.
I promise I won't put it on during some holiday like Christmas or something this time.
Okay.
We'll pick a good day.
Absolutely.
Tony Spera, thank you very much. You can learn more. Go to tonyspera.com. Get those tickets for what's left. This is Ghost Box Radio and the progressive voice of AM 950. We'll be back next week with psychic medium tarot card reader Anne. Have a great week, everyone.